Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy news for conservatives today. But, Jim, we start with important sports news that broke late Sunday afternoon, early Sunday evening. You and I had been speculating in the offseason that former Bears quarterback, the highly overrated Jay Cutler, was being seriously screened by your beloved New York Jets to be their new quarterback, because while you have a lot of quarterbacks, none of them are what you would call, you know, good. So that flirtation was going on, but Jay Cutler ultimately decided on a broadcasting career with Fox that lasted no time whatsoever, at least for now. Maybe it's on hold. He is now the new quarterback for the Miami Dolphins because their quarterback, Ryan Tannehill, has knee problems and may be out for much, if not all, of the year. So not only did you dodge Jay Cutler, Jim, he's now in your division. You got to love this.
I do love this. And if you want to talk about just how controversial has Colin Kaepernick made himself, so controversial the Dolphins will try Jay Cutler over Kaepernick. My even though I usually have a great rivalry with them, my sympathies to the Miami Dolphins fans. I hate to see it happen to any team, even a team that the Jets play twice a year, but that's the way the cookie crumbles. Better luck in 2018, Dolphins fans. You can take this year off.
And Fox Sports has an opening, so good luck to whoever's jockeying to fill that. The Dolphins coach is the Bears' former offensive coordinator, so I think that's how that happened. But if you like the Miami Dolphins, don't expect a lot this year, other than a lot of pouting. All right, let's get on to the good martini. Nikki Haley, once again, the centerpiece of the good martini. This is courtesy of CNN. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley called newly approved sanctions on North Korea a gut punch to that country Saturday and warned of possible military action should the regime continue its aggressions. Quote, "What I will tell you, from the United States' perspective, we're prepared to do whatever it takes to defend ourselves and defend our allies," Haley told CNN's Ana Cabrera. "The ball is in North Korea's court. They now have to decide where they want to go from here. We hope they will go the route of peace and security." She also pushed back on the notion that the Trump administration has presented inconsistent messaging about dealing with North Korea, saying, "I think the administration has said and will continue to say that North Korea has acted recklessly, irresponsibly, and it has to stop. We have tried to say multiple times that all options are on the table." As for what the sanctions actually do, the UN Security Council unanimously voted to impose wide-ranging sanctions against the North Koreans on Saturday for its continued intercontinental ballistic missile testing and violations of other UN resolutions. The sanctions resolution targets North Korea's primary exports, including coal, iron, iron ore, lead, lead ore, and seafood. The sanctions also target other revenue streams, such as banks and joint ventures with foreign companies. So some currency sanctions there as well. So, Jim, Haley's saying this is a big first step. Everything's still on the table if they don't comply. We clearly got the Chinese to go along with this, and the Security Council vote was unanimous. So how big of a deal is it?
It is a big deal. And Nikki Haley deserves every bit of credit that is coming her way. I also think, look, yes, China and Russia in their statements gave a little bit of criticism to the United States, warning us not to take provocative actions, et cetera, et cetera. But this way, their actions speak louder than words, and there seems to be a certain amount of we could expect a certain amount of that coming from the Russians and the Chinese. To me, it's significant that they made that decision to go along with us and to make. Apparently, this is going to be a $1 billion hit to the North Korean economy. And the North Korean economy basically consists of what, arms sales and people smuggling, basically. I believe they count those fired missiles as exports, considering how bad the North Korean economy is. So this is, you know, one, an accomplishment for the United States. It is indication that the Trump administration, despite the claims of it being in chaos and constantly infighting and things like that, that this counts as a serious foreign policy win for them. I also think it's worth noting that in the tone of coverage since the Russian efforts to influence the election have indicated that the U.S.-Russian relations are getting worse and worse. And we instituted those sanctions that the Trump administration, or at least President Trump himself, was not such a big fan of, passed by overwhelming majorities in the House and Senate. And I raised that question, like, okay, so what do we want to do next? This is, you know, one of the significant moments of Russia actually doing something we want them to do. And not for a partisan interest or for helping President Trump, but for a legitimate U.S. national security goal. So how should we greet this? Obviously, we wouldn't necessarily have to undo all of our sanctions, but I think we should at least recognize this. And maybe this is their way of crying uncle and saying, OK, we've escalated tensions far enough. Now we're going to try to play ball with you. And so that, too, I think could be a good sign. We'll see if this follows up with more Russian hostility. It's a one-off, or whether this is their effort to recognize, we've antagonized you enough. It's time to work together. Nobody wants to see war on the Korean Peninsula, and maybe, just maybe, Russia is willing to play a slightly more useful role than they have lately, which is admittedly not useful at all.
All right, let's move on to other issues. The bad martini now. This is courtesy of The Hill, although the big story related to this martini is from the New York Times. Vice President Mike Pence on Sunday called rumors that he is working behind the scenes to run for president in 2020, quote, laughable and absurd. The American people know that I could not be more honored to be working side by side with a president who is making America great again, Pence said in a statement. A New York Times report on Saturday said multiple advisors to Pence claimed he has been hinting to party donors that he is ready to run in 2020 if Trump does not. Pence has been keeping up a busy political schedule as vice president. He has reportedly been courting influential donors, hosting events at his Naval Observatory residence, and so forth. He has also apparently raised $1 million for his own political action committee. So fundraising used to be fairly common, Jim, in previous administrations. Pence is doing it now. Maybe he is hedging his bets here and there, but obviously, if Trump is on the ballot in 2020, the idea that Pence would run against him seems particularly absurd, which is a good word to use. Also, since it's only mid-2017, there's plenty of 2020 chatter for some reason. The New York Times also talking about the fact that John Kasich, the term-limited governor of Ohio, who ran unsuccessfully, to put it mildly, in 2016, has declined to rule out a 2020 campaign in multiple television interviews and has indicated to associates that he may run again even if Mr. Trump seeks another term. So we're all thrilled about that. Why are we still talking so much about 2020 when we still haven't figured out how badly the Russians stole the election in 2016?
Good point. We'll have to see just how well the Russian influence efforts are 4 years from now. They have a lot of time, a lot of road ahead, Greg. Now, this time story was a little bit strange because a lot of what they attributed, at least to Pence, was fairly routine behavior. Of course, he's going to go around and do a lot of the party dinners and stuff like that. Yes, of course, if you're Mike Pence, you are thinking about running for president someday. Is it conceivable that for some reason Trump does not run in 2020? Yeah, to quote that SportsCenter line, he's listed as day-to-day, but then again, aren't we all? The possibility of health-related issues, the possibility of Democrats certainly would like to try to impeach him. I don't think that's likely to happen. Resignation, Trump deciding that he's made America great again and his work is done. Any one of these things could conceivably happen. So it's not insane for Pence to kind of make sure his ducks are in a row if that scenario were to come to pass. But most of what's described in that article is fairly routine things for a Republican vice president to be doing. Maybe we've forgotten about this because the last two vice presidents have been kind of up there in years and were generally seen to be at the last stop in their political careers. But Pence isn't. Pence is relatively young compared to most other recent vice presidents and obviously would be thinking about possibly running someday in the future. But the other thing is that, it's also worth noting that Trump is a fairly controversial figure in a lot of portions of the country, even amongst certain Republicans. Think back to that suburban district outside Atlanta where, Tom Price had won by a wide margin, but Donald Trump had not. You can send Mike Pence, and there's not a single conservative in the country who's going to bristle or have any negative response. I see Ed Gillespie here in Virginia, who's running for governor, is touting the fact that Mike Pence is on the trail. If he does tout the fact that he's going to run with Donald Trump at some point, it's going to be in the far southwest corner of the state, Greg. It's not going to be here. Arlington, Alexandria, Fairfax County. Yeah, you don't want to talk about your connections to Trump up here. But then, further down in the state, there might be an advantage to it. This is just basic politics. And I don't really understand why this would be seen as this, Republicans are preparing for Trump to step down type thing. Now, on Kasich, look, we know when John Kasich is going to stop thinking about being president someday, Greg.
The day he dies?
Is when his pulse stops. That's pretty much the what it's going to take. Now, what I find particularly intriguing about this, there are some listeners who like the fact that I was not a fan of Trump during 2016, some who don't like it. Let me just point out, if you give me a choice between Trump or Kasich in 2020, Greg, I'll go with Trump. Just to stick it to you, John Kasich, just to get you for what you did in 2016, which was ensure that there was never a one-on-one matchup between Donald Trump and a traditional conservative Republican. The last traditional conservative Republican standing was Ted Cruz. We can argue about whether he was the best choice or not the best choice, but by that point it had gotten there. And at that point, it was fairly clear that John Kasich was running for president of Ohio. He had finished way back in the tail end of the pack in Iowa. Yes, he was second place in New Hampshire, but he was 20 points behind Trump. He was only 15%. Let's not, you know, overstate the idea that he came, you know, oh, he was so close to winning New Hampshire. Was nothing in South Carolina, nothing in Nevada, and really was this distant also ran through most of the states, including, let's point out, he lost to Rubio in the Arizona primary after Rubio had left the race. This was a really pathetic campaign. In a year, say, the only person who can't laugh at John Kasich is Jim Gilmore. this was a campaign that kind of largely wasted everybody's time because it was clear, no, John Kasich, we understand you are the most recent version of the John Weaver model of a centrist Republican named John running as the Republican for people who don't really like Republicans that much. Yes, Joy Behar loves John Kasich. Yes, the New York Times editorial board loves John Kasich. They love him because he criticizes other Republicans, and he generally criticizes them from the left, not from the right. And this is a persona, whether it's in the form of John Huntsman or in the form of John McCain, that a lot of Republicans do not like. And yet John Kasich keeps being convinced that there is some market for that, and that I just don't see. Let's assume that things don't go well for the Trump presidency. Unimaginable, I'm sure. But let's just assume for a moment that, you know, come 2018, 2019, the Trump presidency looks like it's in trouble, and there's some significant number of Republicans don't want Trump to run for another term, want to nominate somebody else. Why would they reward John Kasich, the guy who pretty much helped Trump get the nomination, by staying in the race for so long and dividing the non-Trump vote? Why would the Never Trumpers unite around John Kasich? If at least some of the objection to Trump was because he was not a consistent conservative. And let's point out that since he's come into office, Trump has been more conservative than I think some people had expected. But let's say, you know, the folks who are really Ted Cruz backers or Rubio backers or myself, Bobby Jindal, Rick Perry, Scott Walker, people who really wanted to see a consistent, accomplished conservative instead of this reality TV show guy. Well, why would we hand it to John Kasich when John Kasich has basically spent every day since Trump got elected insisting that we have to keep the Medicaid expansion in Obamacare? I mean, Jason Hart's head will explode if Kasich gets any significant traction in the Republican Party. So I don't really know what John Kasich is doing here. Add to the fact that he's disliked by the conservatives, he's disliked by the Trump people. He did not attend the convention in his own home state. You know, this has been a really awkward road for John Kasich. And none of this has deterred his adamant belief that he should be the next president of the United States.
Jim, why do you hate mailmen and their children so much?
Yes, yeah. If only he had mentioned that during the campaign, he might have done better.
That's right. All right. From bad to crazy, let's go to the New York Post. There's a battle going on here between Dunkin' Donuts and the NYPD. Dunkin' Donuts suggested Saturday that the layout of one of its Brooklyn shops is actually to blame for the rude treatment a pair of NYPD cops experienced there. Dunkin' brand spokeswoman Michelle King continued to apologize for last Sunday's incident when the cops were refused service at a Dunkin' Donuts Baskin-Robbins on Atlantic Avenue in Bedford-Stuyvesant, insisting the company has, quote, a long history of supporting the NYPD. King said the store's configuration put both the crew members and two officers in a difficult situation because it was not clear where to order, adding there are two registers, but only one is routinely staffed. Quote, the franchisee has informed us that he has made temporary adjustments to the store's signage to be followed by a more permanent solution to avoid situations like this in the future, King said. She added, the franchisee posted a temporary sign on the ice cream dipping cabinet that states to guests to place their order at the Dunkin' Donuts register. But the officers insisted that both of the lines had been staffed. Law enforcement sources told the Post that the two cops with the 73rd Precinct's detective squad who went into the store to buy ice cream were simply ignored by a clerk. I don't serve cops, the clerk said, according to the sources. The police were stunned by the company's apparent amended mea culpa And the statement is, quote, basically Dunkin' Donuts is saying that the two officers in the store were too stupid to know where to order, while every other customer came in and knew where to order, said Sergeant's Benevolent Association boss Ed Mullins, quote, it's an insult to all members of law enforcement. So, Jim, you know, the stereotype of cops is coffee and donuts. That would be a pretty natural constituency for this company. They seem to be eager to burn this bridge, it would appear.
Yeah. First of all, how'd you like to be a proprietor of another Dunkin' Donuts somewhere in New York City? As far as you know, none of your employees have been disrespectful to cops or refused to serve them or something like that. As far as we know, you're perfectly happy with cops because I assume they're pretty darn good customers. You know, they're you know, whatever you think of the performance of the NYPD, their money is green just like everybody else. Why wouldn't you want those cops to be there purchasing your donuts and purchasing your coffee? So they must be, my guess is there's probably quite a few folks who are really irritated by this. It'd be much easier if for the Dunkin' Donuts folks at this particular, by the way, it's Bed-Stuy. Who could have figured that part of Brooklyn having an issue with cops? Figure out who was responsible, figure out those particular people behind the counter. Let's also point out, as much as I want to support the NYPD, having terrible service at any fast food place isn't as rare an experience as they might seem. I don't know about you, Greg. I go into a large number of places, including particularly lately CVS, where you go in and there's literally no one behind the counter.
Right.
And I don't mean like not they have the electronic checking, scanning, you know, posts. I mean, just simply there's nobody there. I always look at that and wonder if there's been a mass alien abduction or rapture or something. And I just missed the boat. Service died during the Great Recession. And so it's really unfortunate that cops would be subjected to this. And this idea of I don't serve cops. Like, have you talked about that with your employer? Did you mention that during the job interview? Yo, little thing here, I cannot serve coffee and donuts to a cop. I'm morally opposed to serving them. If you're the employer of that people, why would you tolerate that for 1 second? Why would you want to risk the possibility of cops choosing to boycott your store? So it's pretty appalling if true. You don't think it's unlikely the cops would completely make this up. I don't know about you, Greg. The other thing is I heard that Dunkin' Donuts, separate because of this controversy, was considering changing its name. Apparently, they're opening a store in California somewhere, and they just want to call it Dunkin'.
Yes.
With no donuts. Now, Greg, I don't know about you. The moment this came up, there was quite a bit of discussion on Twitter about other names that are probably more fitting of Dunkin' Donuts than the familiar name they've had for years and years. Among them, Krispy Kreme is better, but this place is right here. The one I like is, this is the only place serving coffee near your gate at the airport. The one thing I will give them credit for is that you go in there saying, okay, I'll have a donut. And I don't know about you, Greg. I walk away with like three or four. I don't know. You all of a sudden you have that moment of indecision and then you have them. But maybe I guess I may have to boycott them in solidarity with the NYPD. And you know what that means, Greg?
What's that?
Really good news for Krispy Kreme. I mean, I'm not going to not eat donuts out of solidarity. No. I just got to find a different donut place. So
I know exactly the spot you're talking about. It's right by security at Reagan National, right?
Right. Yeah.
It's very tempting. Very tempting, but maybe not as tempting anymore. But, you know, that one didn't not serve cops. So,
well, this way, when people are willing to turn down donuts over it, that's when you know you're really outraged. Like, when you know, attention, Colin Kaepernick, attention, snotty Dunkin' Donuts cashier, right? When people will turn down football and donuts, then you know you have really crossed the line.
Good point. Good point. All right, Jim, good start to the week. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.